puna, again and again. Smarayanti, they remind. Nanda Gopasuta, of the son of Nanda, the cowherd king. Bhata, certainly. Sri, divine. Niketai, having markings. Ta, his. Padakai, because of the footprints. Vismartam, to forget. Na, not. Eva, indeed. Saksnumaha, are we able? Translation. All these remind us constantly of Nanda's son. Indeed, because we see Krishna's footprints, which are marked with divine symbols, we can never forget him. Om Agyanati Nandasya Ganandana Sarakaya Chakshur Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupam Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Sivasari Gaura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So here it is said, all these remind us constantly of Nanda's son. In Sanskrit, the word puna puna smarayanti. Puna puna means from moment to moment, again and again. So each time again, the gopis are remembering Krishna. Because everything relates to Krishna. And especially, there are Krishna's footprints everywhere. It is described in the Krishna book how when the residents of Vrindavan roam all over Vrindavan, that everywhere there are the footprints of Krishna. And no one will ever step on a footprint of Krishna, not even the animals. So they very carefully walk around these footprints of Krishna, and therefore they are untouched, and there are more and more footprints of Krishna everywhere. So in this way, the number of footprints of Krishna are just increasing, and they stay for a long time, naturally. So in this way, the nature of Vrindavan is that everywhere one can see these footprints of Krishna, which are marked with divine symbols. On the lotus feet of Krishna, there are different symbols. These symbols are mentioned also in the commentaries of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and quoted here in the purports of this 10th canto, where it is said that on Krishna's lotus feet there is a thunderbolt. Why is there a thunderbolt? Well, in case there is a devotee who says that, how can I surrender to Krishna? My karma is so bad, so bad, and it is so huge. It is like a huge mountain. So my karma is really insurmountable. How can I attain Krishna? It will not be possible. And then Krishna, he says, no, here is this thunderbolt. And thunderbolts smash mountains to pieces. So no matter how big your karma, no matter how bad it is, the thunderbolt on Krishna's lotus feet can smash it all. And therefore, we can take shelter of Krishna's lotus feet at any time. Also, some people might say, well, I want to surrender to Krishna, but, you know, my mind is very strong, uncontrollable. My mind is as strong as an elephant. Ah, Krishna has answered that also. On his lotus feet there is a stick with a point and a hook, which they use in India, those kind of sticks, to control the elephant. The hook goes behind the ear, and then there are certain points on the body of an elephant which are sensitive, and through poking, or not poking, but pressuring on these points, the elephant can be controlled. So even an elephant can be brought under control with such a stick. Therefore, even the mind can be brought under control for one who takes shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna. So the lotus feet of Krishna are very important. And here, in this particular case, they act as udipana, or as impetuses to remember Krishna. One, for example, if we hear a flute, if anyone plays a flute, immediately we may think Krishna. If we see water, we may think Yamuna. If we anywhere hear a peacock, immediately we think of Vrindavan. Immediately we remember Krishna. So in this way, remembering Krishna is brought about by these udipana, or these things that remind us of Krishna. And it is said a devotee, he must in his life just have many of such things that help him to remind of Krishna. So one must build up his life in such a way that there are many things that remind us of Krishna, somehow or other. Things that are related to Krishna. And in this way we create an atmosphere that reminds us of Krishna. Prabhupada started everywhere temples around the world, and he named them New Vrindavan, New Mayapur, all for the purpose of reminding us of the Holy Dham and invoking the atmosphere of the Holy Dham. And in this way, taking us there to the lotus feet of Krishna. When Prabhupada was in France, in New Mayapur, it was in the afternoon, and Prabhupada said, "So, what fruits will you offer to Krishna today?" And someone said, "Well, it will be a little difficult because actually we ran out of fruit and we have to purchase some fruit." Prabhupada said, "No, just offer some fruits from the garden. Why don't you just offer some bananas?" And they said, "Prabhupada, there are no bananas here in France." And Prabhupada said, "In the future, there will be bananas here in New Mayapur." So this remains a mystical response. We don't quite know what that means, if that means that the climate in the world is going to change or what. But beyond that, we know that by invoking the mood of Vrindavan or the mood of Mayapur, that one can gradually, and one starts worshipping in that way, then Krishna can manifest also. He can also manifest the atmosphere of Vrindavan, Mayapur, and so on, even in such a place. Just like when we go to Jaipur, to the Radha Govinda temple, then we feel that we are in Vrindavan, not in Jaipur. There is Jaipur, the whole city of Jaipur, but that temple, it is Vrindavan. Govindaji came from Vrindavan and Vrindavan went with him. And when you're there, it's Vrindavan, it's not Jaipur. Very clear. In this way, the remembrance of Krishna is not just something that happens in the mind, but rather the remembrance of Krishna also brings Krishna. It becomes physical. Krishna, actually, so far so good. The remembrance of Krishna can easily be disturbed by crying babies, if you are not so transcendental. But if you are very transcendental, then you think of baby Krishna. And you see Krishna wearing nothing, just a little black cord with a bell. And just some kajal, these black lines around the eyes, which are not just there for looks, but also to keep the flies away, right? So in this way, Krishna, as a baby, is dressed, and it says that in his belly there are three lines, right? So it is said. And his navel is very deep and like a lotus flower. Different parts of Krishna's body are like a lotus flower. So you see how this lecture is also worship, going along the track of Udipana, because we are seeing or hearing the baby. Okay, we try to dovetail it and remember baby Krishna, and then we came to a description of Krishna. We came to his navel, which happens to be like a lotus navel, and immediately we are with lotuses, and then we can just start remembering everything to do with lotus, and go on into remembering Krishna's lotus feet, his lotus navel, his lotus hands, which are like cups, his lotus eyes, his lotus mouth, and so on. What did I forget? Lotus devotees? Okay. That's a jump, you know. Thank you very much, Maharaj. That's another way you can, a devotee can also act as an impetus for remembrance of Krishna. And he can steer our remembrance in a certain way. So, of course, sometimes we can follow it and sometimes it's just over our head. what to do, you know. But whatever may be, as long as we remember Krishna, everything is fine. This is our objective, to remember Krishna. The gopis, however, they were in a different state of mind, as we can see in the next verses. And we'll read those also, because there was no purport anyway. Gatya lalita yodara hasa lila valukanai madhya girarita dveya katam tam vismaramahe. So this word vismaranam comes back all the time, vismartum. So it's not just remembering Krishna, but vi is magnified. So it's intensely remembering Krishna. Remembering Krishna in a way that it's just overwhelmingly remembering Krishna. Very strong. Translation. Oh Uddhava, how can we forget him when our hearts have been stolen away by the charming way he walks, his generous smile and playful glances, and his honey-like words? Hey Nata, hey Ramanata, Vrajanati Nasana, Maknam Udra Govinda Gokulam Vijinar Navat. O Master of the Goddess of Fortune, O Master of Vraja, O Destroyer of all suffering, Govinda, please lift your Gokul out of the ocean of distress in which it's drowning. The gopis are remembering Krishna all the time, but they are remembering him in separation. So, therefore, their desire is simply to see Krishna face to face. Although this remembrance of Krishna is also being with Krishna. We see in the Nectar of Devotion the description that the mental activity can sometimes become factual. That famous story about the Brahmana and the sweet rice. The story is that Brahmana was actually every day offering sweet rice to his deity, and for years in his mind, and for years he was checking the temperature, if it was cool actually. And one day, while he did it, in his mind, he burned his finger. And Lord Vishnu was laughing, and Lakshmi Devi asked, "Why are you laughing?" And I said, "Oh, my devotee." So, the mental activities actually become a reality, and Krishna will manifest. Krishna will manifest himself. So, still, the gopis were not satisfied with that. Uddhava came. And Uddhava came with that answer. Just remember Krishna. And that should be all right. It's not a problem that you're separated from Krishna, because actually separation from Krishna doesn't exist if you remember Krishna. One who remembers Krishna is always with Krishna. That was the point. But the gopis didn't buy into that. They were not convinced about that. And they said, no, we want to see Krishna personally. That argument did not satisfy them. And in fact, they were, in spite of the fact that they were always remembering Krishna, they were also constantly remembering that they were separated from Krishna, and therefore that was too much. Purport. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur presents the following insight into this scene. Someone might propose to the gopis, why don't you just go somewhere else? Leave Vrindavan and then you won't have to see these rivers, mountains and forests. Cover your eyes with your garments. Use your intelligence to lead your mind to some other thought and thus forget Krishna. Huh? These are techniques to get over distress. If some distressful situation has happened, let's say someone's died in the family and you can't forget it, well, then, you know, move somewhere else, move to another place, so you're not constantly reminded, keep busy, distract the mind and forget. The gopis answer to this suggestion in the previous verse by saying, we no longer possess our intelligence, for Krishna has taken it away by his supreme beauty and charm. So we cannot use our intelligence to distract our mind, not possible. It doesn't work. We have no more intelligence left. Krishna has stolen it. And in whatever direction we look, we just see Krishna. In the Antya Lila of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there is a verse which describes Purusatraya, the threefold manifestation of Krishna, which stole the mind of Srimata Radharani. There it is said that Radharani is lamenting. She is saying that that personality who has an unlimited beautiful form has stolen my sight. And then there is another personality who plays his flute. And he has just captured my mind. And yet there is again another personality who speaks in a very cunning way, and he also has fully captured and attracted me with his words. And in this way, I have simultaneously become attached to three personalities. And therefore, I'd better give up my body, right? Because this is a very disgraceful situation. How can you be simultaneously attached to three different persons? So this is how she was experiencing it. So, there is a purport earlier in the Srimad Bhagavatam which describes Narada Muni who was experiencing ecstatic symptoms. And it said when Narada Muni was seeing Krishna, he was experiencing great ecstasy, and it said all his senses were simultaneously becoming fully absorbed in perceiving Krishna, and they started to compete with each other. So the sight of Krishna was just so overwhelming that it wanted just to completely take over. It's just like when we are hearing some beautiful music, then we get into it and we close our eyes and we just go really deep, and we are all ear, and all the other senses sort of they're not there anymore. We're just all ear. But in the case of Narada, he was all eye, all ear, all smell, all everything at the same time, and it was all competing in his mind. So it created great confusion. So Srimati Radharani is going through a similar type of experience where her different sensual experiences of Krishna are competing for prominence in her consciousness. What a level of Krishna consciousness. So how does a question of forgetting, how does a question of distracting? Not possible. Srimati Radharani said, since Krishna left, I have not slept. She said, because sometimes sleep also plays its tricks with me, and sometimes while sleeping, I also forget Krishna. Therefore, I haven't slept since Krishna left. She just gave up on sleeping because the thought of forgetting Krishna, unbearable. So, never slept again. So, this is kind of the things that are being described. When we are looking at Srimati Radharani, we're looking at a devotee who is just in another league. And she also becomes empowered by Krishna. It is said that the gopis, they are not very... they consider that Krishna's flute is like a competitor, because he brings that flute to his lips. And they consider that their exclusive property. Therefore, they are somewhat envious of the flute. So Srimati Radharani was trying to steal that flute. But due to her ecstasy, her body was so effulgent that when in the night she was trying to steal the flute, the effulgence of her body was giving her away. And she just condemned that ecstasy. So these are all different descriptions describing her extraordinary level of devotion. In the Srimad Bhagavatam it is said, Gopya Kamat Bayat Kamsu Dvesas Chenanyayan Vipa Vrishna Sambandat Yuyam Bhakta Vayam Vibhu. The gopis, by their special lusty, transcendental lusty desires, Kamsa, by his fear, the Vrishnis, by their family relationships, and we, the ordinary devotees, by hard work in devotional service, are all attaining the favor of Krishna, somehow or other. So it is shown how different devotees obtain the mercy of Krishna. And the gopis are basically described to be in another category. They are not in the category of ordinary devotees. We obviously are in that category of ordinary devotees. Therefore, for us, remembrance of Krishna will not just be the same as what the gopis are doing. It is not that although we appreciate the footprints of Krishna, we don't appreciate him in the same way. We say, very nice, Krishna's footprints. Very nice. Very nice indeed. And now what else? But for the gopis, it stops there. Like we see, for example, described Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he is also in a mood of ecstasy, some of the devotees, they understand the mood of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and they chant bhajans about Krishna. And so Mukunda was chanting a bhajan for following the mood of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he just for, I think it was 9 or 10 hours, I'm not sure, he just chanted the same line, just one line of the same bhajan. They never went any further because he understood that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was on that one point. He didn't go any further. His mind just stayed there. So then Mukunda also stayed there and just chanted the same bhajan, the same line for 10 hours. Whereas we, we're always looking for something new. Is there a new book? Some new story? Something exciting? Something new to read. Something new. Right? Okay, we heard it 100 times, 1,000 times, and is there something new? Always looking for something new. Before I was a devotee, I had a problem with the Krishna book. Right? I somehow or other had one. And I found it unreadable. Right? And I'll tell you why. Because I thought, there's no plot in this book, There comes a demon, and there is Krishna, and 1, 2, 3, boom, demon dead. Okay, story finished, right? There was no tension, you know. I mean, it wasn't one of those books where you want to look on the last page. Who's going to win, Krishna or the demon? I can't tolerate it any longer, you know. I have to know and jump to the last page, right? Like some Agatha Christie or, I don't know, some thriller, something like that. Alfred Hitchcock. So, it was... like that, I didn't like the Krishna book. And somehow or other, when I, after Vrindavan, I came to, I had joined there, but then I had to go back to Holland and I got sick, so I took a little break from the temple and then came back to Amsterdam temple and sort of joined again, second time. And when I came there, I rang the doorbell of the temple, and I said I wanted to join, and they let me in. And then this devotee said, all right, sit here and read this magazine. So I said, I've already read this magazine. I've already read it. He said, it doesn't matter. A devotee reads it again and again. So that was my first instruction, you know. So I said, all right, well, I guess I came to surrender, so... here I go, you know. I read it again and again. So I was reading the same magazine again and again. And then this devotee, after about half an hour, he came by. And I sort of gestured from, okay, I'm here, yeah. And he said, that's all right, you know. And I just kept on sitting there. So, and then they just let me sit there the whole day. And I was reading this magazine. So I thought, it must be some sort of something they do with new people, you know. They put him on a chair and they have to read a magazine the whole day. And they're just testing if you're sincere and if you're serious. So I said, I'll sit here, you know, I'll sit here until they call me and I'll read this magazine no matter what, you know, until I'll read till I drop, right? So I was reading the same magazine the whole day. Right? And I must say, I found so many things that I knew things all the time. And I was really getting an experience of what it means to read in depth, you know, and keep on reading again. And I found new details and new things. And I just, and I realized something. You know, I realized it's not about the new story or about the plot, but it's all about just going deep into the details. Right? That's what it's all about. I learned that on that first day, and suddenly I thought of the Krishna book, and I saw it in a different light. So Krishna made some arrangement for me there to kind of get over this offensive mentality, because I said, this book, you know, can't read it. But this is the nature of the pastimes of Krishna. One goes deeper and deeper, and we see that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu could hear 9 or 10 hours the same line. The same line. Jai Radha Madhava. Jaya Radha Madhava, Jaya Radha Madhava. It's like, you know, the CD got stuck, you know. Kunjabihari. No, it just stays on Jaya Radha Madhava, right? Because the focus is completely there. It is described when Lord Nityananda was going with the devotees to Bengal that Ram Abhiram was playing a flute and was taking the posture of Krishna. Tribhanga Rupa. And then he would just stand like that. He would just get so in the ecstasy of playing out the role of Krishna, and in that way remembering Krishna, he would freeze on the spot. And he would also stand there for like 12 hours, and all the devotees would just have a kirtan, ecstatic kirtan around him, and get in the same mood, right? Just focus on Ram Abhiram taking the form of Krishna. And then they would walk again, and they were on the way to Vrindavan, but they got so ecstatic and so absorbed in hearing and chanting that they missed the turn. Yeah? And then they went back, and then when it was missed the turn again. So it took a very long time before they finally got to Vrindavan. So the level of absorption is much deeper. So it is said that one must be deeply absorbed, and one must be very eager. It is said, lolyam, eagerness. That is the price for spontaneous devotional service. Tata lolyam api mulyam ekalam. One must have this lolyam, this eagerness. So this is described in the Nectar of Devotion, this eagerness, this lolyam. Later in the Nectar of Devotion, when the symptoms, the nine symptoms of bhava are described, then eagerness is again described. But this time it is described as samutkanta. Huh? Samutkanta is now the word used for eagerness. And they say the eagerness of one who is in bhava is different than the eagerness who is trying to approach spontaneous devotional service. The eagerness of one in bhava is the eagerness to actually always be with Krishna. And there is no question. There is no question that such a person is not remembering Krishna. Just completely in great eagerness, always remembering Krishna. That's in bhava. Whereas in this lolyam, it is the eagerness to... it is also the eagerness to serve Krishna. But one is not constantly... not always remembering Krishna. It's more great eagerness. Oh Krishna, please give me shelter at your lotus feet. I want nothing but your shelter. So it's the eagerness to take shelter. But in Samutkanta, it's just such eagerness that one is just always, always and always completely absorbed in just Krishna. And Krishna is always there in one's consciousness. Always. So there's this distinction. So therefore, as I said, gopya kamat, the gopis through their special lusty desires, and we through hard work. So there is a distinction. Day after day, we sort of get to this point that there is a distinction between us and the gopis. Because there is. We cannot just approach that same level of absorption. Therefore, we rather are in the process of Krishna Anushilanam, of cultivation. We are in a program of cultivating our remembrance of Krishna, of very carefully making a program where we are engaging our different senses. In the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, we find there are the process of sadhana bhakti is described. Devotional service in practice. That's for us. Right? And it said there are 64 limbs to this bhakti. 64 aspects to this bhakti are described. So, recently, a new publication of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu came out, done by Bhanu Maharaj, and it gives us a translation of the verses. It gives us a Sanskrit translation of the verses and commentaries of Jiva Goswami and of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. And it's super interesting. Very, very interesting. I mean, it's like a must, you know. You got to buy it whenever you get your chance, you know, going to India or so. Get that. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, translated by Bhanu Swami. It's absolutely great. I had the good fortune that when the book came out, that I was supposed to just start teaching a course on the Nectar of Devotion. You know, so it was just what I needed, you know. And so I was on a great program, you know, early to bed, early to rise, right? Get up like 1:30 and then just study this Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu and compare it to the Nectar of Devotion and so on, compare it to some other commentaries and things, and many interesting things. So one thing that was very interesting, that there was a division made of the 64 aspects of devotional service. And this division, which was made, was giving a list. I cannot rattle that off the top of my list, of my mind. But, for example, it's not correct what I'm saying now, because I don't have such a memory. But it said, for example, that nine times it was dealing with the sense of smell. 20 times with the sense of touch, and so on. So it was dividing these different activities, these different 64 activities, of how they related to engaging one of our senses. And it really made it very clear of how we must engage all the senses in the service of the Lord. Just like when we're offering arati, we're engaging the senses. The senses are all being captured in this way. And we make offering to the different senses of Krishna. So like that, in the process of bhakti, one must engage the senses in the service of Krishna. And that, of course, was supported by the verse Sarva Upadhi Vinir Muktam Tat Paratvena Nirmalam Rishikena Rishikesa Sevanam Bhakti Uchate, which is saying that Rishikesa Rishikena, one must engage the senses in the master, in the service of the master of the senses. And in this way, one becomes absorbed in devotional service. So, because we have this problem, how to become absorbed, how to chant your rounds, right, and fix the mind on the rounds. It seems impossible, isn't it? It's like the most impossible thing. What is the most impossible thing, right? To fix the mind on the holy name, right? One could say, at least for the sadhaka. The sadhaka's predicament is that this mind, it doesn't want to stay at the holy name. Have we even ever chanted one attentive name? Yeah? I'm not even speaking about an attentive round. One attentive name. One name with full attention. I was reading one time in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and it's all about Haridas Thakur and how he was daily chanting 300,000 names. And it said he was chanting 300,000 names for the pleasure of the Lord. And I thought, have I ever chanted one name for the pleasure of the Lord? I've chanted for so many reasons. I've chanted because I'm afraid. I'm just afraid of the material energy and taking another birth. And I'm chanting out of fear. Yeah? That's one reason. I'm chanting because I heard if you chant, you go back to Godhead. And I wouldn't mind. Yeah, I wouldn't mind. So I'm chanting because of that. I'm also chanting out of curiosity, because I've heard if you chant that you get a spiritual experience. And well, you know, why not? Let's see what happens. Yeah? So I've chanted for many reasons, but I have not chanted ever for the pleasure of Krishna. So when I read that, sometimes you read something and it just grease the wheels. a little oil might help. Yeah. So anyway, to chant 300,000 names for the pleasure of the Lord. That is love of God. And that is what we are striving for. And by engaging all the senses, we can gradually come to this point. So that we, through all the senses, we just connect with Krishna and satisfy whatever is there for desires in our related to our senses, satisfy it fully with Krishna. Like, see Krishna's beauty. It is said the beauty of Krishna stole away the eyes of those who had seen him and made them blind. After that, they couldn't see anything anymore. Yes, if we really start to see, appreciate the beauty of Krishna, then mundane beauty becomes meaningless. If we really taste prasadam, whoever wants to eat ordinary food, right? Food, you know? Ugh. Food, right? Who wants to eat food, you know? It feels, for a devotee, food sounds a horrible word, right? Food, you know, something you give to an animal, right? Feed the animal, food, right? But prasadam, right? It's like blissful and full of. It tastes wonderful. It's, you can taste the bhakti, right? When Mother Sachi cooked for the last time for Nimai, after he had taken sannyas and was brought to the house of Advaita Acharya, Mother Sachi, for 1 week, cooked for Nimai, and no one else was allowed to cook. And that prasadam, no one had ever tasted anything like that. So the bhakti in that prasadam, it was inconceivable. And devotees that ate it were just swooning and rolling on the floor, and never had they tasted anything, so much bhakti. So one tastes the bhakti, and then one gets purified and makes spiritual advancement with every bite. So these are all ecstatic things. So spiritual life can satisfy the senses, service to Krishna can satisfy the senses in a way that nothing else can. And that is the point. And therefore, we must with great tivrena bhakti yogena, with great force, with great eagerness, engage our different senses in different ways in the service of Krishna. And in that way, we will become captured. And last but not least, I will say that of all the senses, the ear is described to be the most important. Because the ear can immediately transfer us. Because it is said that sound is the most subtle of these material, of the gross material elements, and therefore the closest in approaching the Supreme Lord. Therefore, through sound, we can very quickly approach Krishna. That was sound. Whew. So, like that, we come to the conclusion that now that the gopis are totally absorbed in Krishna, we learn from that what the goal is of Krishna consciousness, and we, by hard work in devotional service, can also attain perfection in spiritual life. Thank you very much. Any questions? Any comments? Maharaj.
We see how, for example, material sense gratification, trying to enjoy separately from Krishna, is obviously a dead end. There are various spiritual paths which recommend the ascending process in terms of the yogis thinking of one's own personal strength and was making forward steps. It seems that you've been speaking of, for example, bhakti yoga, it's the opposite, it's a descending process,
mm-hmm.
where the grace comes from above. And what can help a devotee who may, for example, have some preconceptions or bad habits in their service, that they're not really experiencing that empowerment of the descending reality? What is the best way one can understand, or shall we say, progress to the realistic reality of being enjoyed by Krishna?
Yes. Throughout the ages, devotees have been struggling with their mind, struggling with their material attachments, struggling with attachment to philosophical speculation, and so on. And throughout the ages, the answer would have been, well, just take shelter very seriously of the scriptures and of the process of sadhana bhakti. That would have been the answer throughout the ages. But then somehow or other, in this age, there's a different answer. There's a different answer. Because this is the age of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and because it is that age of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says that by the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, an ignorant child can swim across the ocean of nescience, which is filled with the crocodiles of various speculative theories. Right, so, I mean, if you just look for a moment, an ignorant child can swim across an ocean. I mean, that's out of the question, right? First of all, you know, child has less power, child is small, is also ignorant, doesn't know what to do, what to expect, what not to expect, cannot deal with reality properly. Right? There you go. So cannot even, has no power, cannot even deal with a reality problem, and then it's an ocean full of crocs. Yeah? You go, right? You go first. Nah, it's okay. I don't feel like swimming today. Sort of thing, you know? Who will go in? But by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, an innocent child can easily swim across this ocean of nescience and be saved from the crocs of these speculative theories. It's very interesting that these speculative theories are described like crocodiles. What's our chance? What's our chance? What's our chance? No chance. Right. No chance at all. But by the mercy of Mahaprabhu it can be done. So therefore let us take shelter of the mercy of Mahaprabhu. Right? Now how do you take shelter of the mercy of Mahaprabhu? That's the next question. Well, you can of course give different answers to that. You can say chant Hare Krishna, and that would be a good answer because it's the Yuga Dharma. But in this connection, I would say that a verse comes to my mind which I like, and it is Se Pancha Tattva Mile Prithiviyasya Purva Prema Bandhira Mudra Ugadiya Pancha Mile Lutta Prema Karashvadam Yatta Yatta Piya Trishna Badanakshan. Which means that this Pancha Tattva, they came into this world, broke the lock of the storehouse of love of God, and what did they do? What did they do? No, they did not distribute it. I knew you would say that. They went into the storehouse of love of God and they drank it. Pibata. They drank it and drank it again and again. So therefore, we are the nectar drinkers. 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 So a devotee must always be eager for nectar. We must be nectar hunters. Does anybody have any nectar? Give to me. Whatever you have, I want. I need very bad nectar now. I am so dry. I need some nectar. Now, so we're on the topic of nectar. Then there's a little story made up by me, but it's not speculation. It's not a crocodile, okay? But the story is this. Is that when we are joining this movement, right? Everyone, you know, as soon as you join, you get your outfit, right? And with that, you get a little cup. Very small. As big as a thimble, you know? Something they use for sewing. Little cup. That's your nectar cup. It's very small. And, well, with that little cup, you go, and you hold it out, and you try and catch some nectar, you know. So, as much as you get, it is good. It's very good. But the cup is so small, it's never enough. But still, it's good. And you get addicted, so you do it again and again. But you're never fully satisfied. You're still hungry. You still need more. Now, by doing devotional service, that nectar cup is slowly growing. Slowly growing. So with time it slowly grows and you get some more nectar. And you get more nectar. So therefore spiritual life becomes easier and more inspiring. Then one day, you start to use your cup for giving out the nectar instead of drinking it yourself. And you notice that then your cup starts growing much faster. And of course, you know, you take some good swigs in between yourself, and then there we go again. Hand it out, one for me and one for you, or one for me and ten for you, whatever. But of course, we keep on drinking. But as we start using the cup to hand out the nectar, it is growing and growing in size. Philosophically, I can defend this story, of course. You know, for those who think now he has really done some speculation here. With that verse in the Chaitanya Charitamrita which says that if you give away the mercy of Mahaprabhu, you'll find, and you give everything you received, you find that afterwards you had more than you had before. So it's based on that concept. But this is the trick, Maharaj. It's the cup. It's the cup. That nectar cup. It's all about the nectar. We need nectar, lots of it. And we need like buckets, right? Bigger, bigger. And you see great devotees. I mean, this idea of the nectar cup was not just some idea that came and I was sitting at my desk and thought, what story shall I make up? But it sort of was a metaphor that grew over the years. And I saw Tamal Krishna Maharaj in Vrindavan, and I looked at him and I thought, by the mercy of Prabhupada, he became like a golden vessel, studded with many jewels of association and personal instruction. His capacity to give nectar is so great. Me, I am just a small guy with a little pot, right? Nothing much. But anyway, still, we're going to give out the nectar, so I've got to run faster. Huh? But okay, I'll run faster, scoop up some, give it out, run back, scoop it up. Whereas he just scoops, whoosh, it flows. So like that, different devotees, by different mercy, get different vessels, different cups, different lotus with time. And these lotus, they develop in like very beautiful individual cups, right, studded with jewels and decorations and so on. Just look at the twin brothers in Mayapur. Right? What nectar cups do they have? Right? What are they pouring out to us just by their smile? Right? Please smile again in my direction, if you could. Right? Just like that. So this is the way that our cup of nectar is growing, and then we can give out more, and the more you give, the more you have.
How does one chant for the pleasure of Krishna?
How you chant for the pleasure of Krishna? Well, Prabhupada says that everybody likes it, you know, when he hears people sort of glorifying him. If we go, Yadu Shrestha, oh Yadu, Yadu, Yadu Shrestha, it's like really nice. So, if you sort of walk by and you hear in the corridor in the back somewhere saying, you hear a voice sort of saying, Yadu Shrestha is very nice, you surely look over your shoulder like, hey, who's that? Right? And you sort of note that person. Nice person. Right? You sort of remember, nice guy. Kind of a nice guy. So like that, you know, Krishna also appreciates it. If he's loved, you know, if someone's looking with a sour face, oh God, do I really have to surrender to you? Well, okay, I guess you are the supreme. All right, you win, you know, you are master and I serve, you know. And that doesn't quite do it. Right? That doesn't quite do it. But if we actually simply chant in the mood, appreciating Krishna's glories, that is chanting for the pleasure of Krishna. So, therefore, the more we hear about Krishna's glories, the more we can start appreciating Krishna's glories. So by hearing, we can learn more how to chant for the pleasure of Krishna. And then Prabhupada said that in chanting, the main thing is not fixing our mind. That's not it. It's not. You thought that attentive chanting means that we must fix our mind. That's not the main thing, Prabhupada said. No. He said the main thing is simply to hear ourselves chanting. He said the whole essence is there. Hear ourselves chanting. And then you hear and then you realize you leave out a few nas and you have to then automatically start pronouncing better. So chanting for the pleasure of Krishna is to hear ourselves chanting. Especially, then everything will come right. Okay. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.